When I was a child, I didn't go to Sunday school. I was in the Roman Catholic Church in Venezuela, but I learned the Ten Commandments. I recited them by heart. I think I was 7 or something. And every Sunday when I went to Mass, I remember for my turn in the confession booth, because I was really trying to articulate, you know, my faith, but by myself. And going through them, I remember, you know, as I was waiting, I was going through the commandments like a checklist. I have not killed. I have not. I guess the Sabbath counts, you know, like this is Sunday, I'm here at church. I have not. But the most terrifying one for me was you shall not lie. I had to think harder and really concentrate to see if I had said any lie during the week. And almost every week I decided, well, even if I don't remember, maybe something may have slipped from my mouth. And I said to the priest, I had lied a little. In the, frame mind, that it's better to be safe than sorry. So after I did my penitence, and it was usually Our Father's Prayer, or I left the church feeling very self-righteous. I didn't feel really forgiven because I had not really confessed. You know, I just had maybe guessed that I had lied, but I didn't have a real consciousness of a relationship with God to know what really mattered to Him at that time. And for a few more years, until I started really to learn at school, I was very comfortable with that checklist, you know, to measure my good standing with God. And it was a list with concrete things that God didn't want me to do. And my self-righteousness was so big that most weeks I would say, I don't have anything to confess. I have not sinned at all, but still I confess a lie just in case. The Bible study series that Reverend Anthony is leading on Tuesdays is on the Ten Commandments, a new approach to the Ten Commandments. And just this past Tuesday, our conversation was about the Sabbath. The questions were many, and there was a very interesting and lively participation, right? The gospel story I chose for today, for the International Women's Day, happens on a Sabbath, the holy day. The focus of attention, even in the subtitle of many Bible translations, is Jesus heals a crippled woman on a Sabbath, or Jesus heals on a Sabbath. For the people at that time at the synagogue, this healing was a horrendous transgression, a rupture of the religious traditions that with great zeal they were very proud to observe. Between you and me, maybe that was the only, or the favorite one to check off in their comfortable list of commandments. The synagogue leader was indignant. Just in horror, he addresses them, the audience, trying to control the commotion and to reinstate the rules. If you want to be healed, come on the other 6 days, not on a Sabbath. And it was a woman, the one who caused all of this. But where this woman came from? We don't have her name. It is not in the story a record that she had cried out to Jesus to be healed, like, for example, in the story of the blind man, that blind man, Jesus, have mercy on me. But she just went there, and there was a teaching happening. And her presence, coming from nowhere, interrupts the scene. It makes the eyes of Jesus to turn to her figure, that body that I can imagine had been rendered invisible for many years, since for 18 years she had been in that condition. And it is not easy to miss a bent over body that could not straighten up at all. I would imagine that she had a name and a different life before those 18 years. Maybe she was an independent woman, an active one. Perhaps she was very well known in her community. But for a long 18 years, she had this infirmity, a visible condition that perhaps had made her invisible now in her community. Like she didn't matter. A kind of subhuman person that for a disability is not the full human being. An infirmity, a condition in her back or her muscles, we don't know. Was she in pain? Did she have anyone to take care of her, a caregiver? We don't know either. We only know her as the bent over woman or the crippled woman in the Gospels. I remember another crippled man in Jesus' healing accounts, but this one was helped by his four friends to come to Jesus. And this woman was alone. The bent over woman had the audacity of showing up at the wrong place, at the wrong time, and in the wrong day, according to the accepted wisdom. She interrupted what was important, what mattered, with her presence. I noticed that she uses the same strategy that I call the strategies from the margins, used by many other women in the Bible, women that were silenced, rendered invisible with no rights, like the Canaanite woman interrupting Jesus with her plea to heal her daughter, or like Ruth when she went to the feet of Boaz, or like Mary, who interrupted a very fancy all-men dinner and threw herself to Jesus' feet and anointed him with a very expensive perfume. Or the women at the foot of the cross, risking their lives, interrupting the narrative of an official order orchestrated by the religious and political authorities. All these women were taking risks, all making visible the invisible, all with their actions interrogating the assumptions, the beliefs, and the practices of the status quo. With their actions, these women pointed out to what mattered. While the witnesses of this scene at the synagogue, many with privilege, probably, I'm guessing, comfortable with their religious traditions, feeling self-righteous, having fulfilled the obligations and traditions of the law, were horrified. The passage quotes Jesus saying that, mentioning an infirmity and curing her. We know that there are many women who have physical illnesses who are suffering great physical pain and chronic health conditions, cancer, Alzheimer's, dementia, immunological diseases, and for them we pray together all the time, and especially in this International Women's Day, for their healing, well-being, so they can also stand up from what causes them to suffer, as this woman did. But wait a moment, a crippled condition can also be understood as a metaphor, a powerful picture of what happens to people who are victims of oppression. So her presence in our worship service today, her story confronts us as well. It makes us to think, who is that bent over woman in our circles, in our societies, in our church, in our world? What condition or marker had made her different and oppressed to that extent that she was totally crippled? Can we think today of the color of the skin or the different accent or the ethnicity or the gender, things that are noticeable, and immediately allow people to form an opinion and take value or assign value of a person? I wonder if the infirmity is not in the woman, but in its society, for example, by stereotyping black women and causing them metaphorically to be still sitting in the back of the bus, still to double check when they are not well treated at a counter or at the bank or a store or at a medical office. I wonder if the experience still not being heard is the same when they come to see the school principal to talk about their child. And I wonder if the infirmity, the spirit, as the passage also mentions, the spirit that caused this woman to carry this condition, to be invisible, discriminated, undervalued, and unprotected, is still around us. When we as a society prefer to maintain things as comfortable, safe, and balanced as they are. I wonder if the spirit mentioned in this narrative is not one with tail and chunks? Yeah?
Horns.
Horns. Oh, okay, I couldn't find that word in the translation. Okay, horns and tail. But a community to work to cripple and devalue this woman, a contribution of assumptions, biases, and stereotypes that day by day, throughout these 18 years, continue to press a heavy load on her back, on her spine, on her self-worth. I wonder if the spirit that crippled her began at home, hearing we wanted a boy, not a girl. You are not good enough. We cannot invest in your education. You're just a girl. Your purpose in life is to get married and bear children as soon as you can. Or at school, being bullied or rejected because of a physical or personality feature. Or the color of her skin. Or a learning disability, or better said, a different learning ability. Or a personality that is different, or a different sexual orientation. Or in young women, unheard and misunderstood or unsupported in this difficult society and times. I wonder if the infirmity was not in a woman, but in a society paying lower salaries to women, having glass ceilings barriers to women to advance. Or in judicial systems ignoring murders and cases of domestic violence, as many women die in the hands of their partners every day for a lack of protection from authorities, or the deaf ears as here we go again, to the courage and persistence of Aboriginal women telling their stories and asking for equity. I wonder if the spirit caused to her to bend over as a consequence of her double journey, as many women burdened with a full-time job and taking care of their children and their household, or in the single mom, daily struggles to survive and provide at all costs for her family, or women in the health sector, for a year now exhausted, putting themselves at risk, seeing people sick and dying, experiencing the pain and suffering of many daily, every day, and come home to continue to provide care for her family. I wonder if caregiving is a load that we put as default on women's shoulders, and the responsibilities and sacrifices become invisible and undervalued like the bent over woman. I wonder if the infirmity is in society, around where they have to face alone the social and health systems on behalf of their loved ones, carrying this load, curling their backs more and more. In all these years, I have heard people taking offense on scriptures. They say, I don't believe in the Bible, or I don't read the Bible because it's very violent, it is sexist, it's racist. And I confess that at one point in my journey, I wrote very papers with a feminist perspective where I almost wanted to correct scriptures because I knew better. And I argued with passion about sexism and gender discrimination, but in scriptures. And now I find that this book, that is sweet like honey, is the book that reads me, that causes me to straighten up and give me worth, but it's also the book, and thanks to those stories, we can read our society again and again, and face our human brokenness. As a woman, I give thanks to God for this story, because I can see myself in many chapters of my life as a bent over woman. I also see that our gender struggles are still real and alive today. And it's good to see in these stories that it is not that we're oversensitive or that's, because that's reality. Still today, an unnamed woman, an unwelcome woman. I can also see in this story many women that I have shared with throughout my life, and even today in 2021. And I can see that this story, that even is titled, you know, Jesus Heals on a Sabbath, it is not too much for us to discuss what to do and what not to do on a Sabbath. What matters on the story is this woman, this unnamed woman. This woman that makes me feel affirmed and helped me to stand straight too. And I have needed this affirmation many times in my life as a woman in theological studies, where I was assigned all the texts that said, you know, the women shouldn't preach or talk. And also as a female minister, I wonder if it's not the same in many professions, and even here in the capital of this wonderful country, I wonder if many of our friends and sisters from this congregation have untold stories of gender discrimination or having to prove their credibility, capacity, or to say something in a meeting and being ignored, and, you know, a minute later a man said the same thing, and, oh, that's excellent. So, and in this International Women's Day, it matters. Women matter. And it matters that Jesus notices her. He saw her. He was able and willing to see her. The same experience of Hagar when she said in the desert, "You are the God that sees me." Jesus didn't listen to her. The story doesn't mention that she asked for healing. But with his actions, he showed what mattered. He approached her, and before even touching her, he spoke to her the words of healing and affirmation among this group of men. He validated her, calling her a daughter of Abraham. Amen.